I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. It's draft lottery day for those teams in Canada and out of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about all the playoff action taking place. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we start off by going to the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program our very good friend from CSN Mid-Atlantic. He covers the Washington Capitals. Game 2 later on tonight between the Caps and the Penguins. Chuck Gormley, welcome to the program, and thanks for joining us. Our pleasure, Chuck. Really appreciate you making time on a busy morning. We know that you're on your way to watch the game day skates for the Caps and the Penguins. Game 1, of course, happened earlier in the week. It was a fantastic contest between the Penguins and the Capitals, pretty much living up to all of our expectations. You know, what I took away from that game 1, what I was so impressed by, was the speed at which those teams played. It seemed like it was hockey being played in fast forward. Do you expect that to continue for the remainder of the series, or do you think that it'll become a little more methodical and a little more of a chess match between these two teams that know each other so well, being division rivals and everything along those lines?
I hope it's not a chess match after that game. I hope that they play at that level for 7 games. I think the fans would love it. I would love it. The players would probably love it. And I think they're so evenly matched. I mean, the difference between those two teams in game 1 was about 1 inch. And that's how much room was needed to get that wraparound shot by TJ Oshie past Matt Murray. I loved it. I mean, I thought there were hits. There were great offensive plays, some great saves. I loved it. I mean, I think that's the way hockey is meant to be played, and I think the referees did a great job of letting enough go while still keeping the game intact. I thought it was really a good game, and I'm hoping for 6 more of those.
Chuck, the Ovechkin-Backstrom-Oshie line was obviously really good in Game 1 with TJ Oshie getting the hat trick, but how concerned are you with the lack of production from players like Kuznetsov, Burakovsky, and Justin Williams, who they acquired in the offseason?
Yeah, you know, they didn't play very well in the first-round series against Philadelphia. Justin Williams, very quiet. And at that time, there was Andre Burakovsky on that second line. Evgeny Kuznetsov, I think, had 20 shots in the first 5 games of that series and just couldn't put the puck in the net. So I expect more out of that line, and I was a little surprised that they didn't really do a whole lot. What happened was, Barry tried to put Marcus Johansson on that line, trying to get that line going, and as a result, Andre Burakovsky drops down to the third line, and he gets that line going, unintentionally, I think. So, it should be a good matchup. You know, that I was interested to see whether Barry Trotz would like to have Ovechkin's line against Crosby's line, and he did, and they've done that pretty much all season. He's put his top line against other teams' top lines, and Crosby's line was -3 pretty much across the board. So they've got to step it up a little bit. Patrick Hornquist said we were outplayed and we need to do better in game 2.
Yeah, you checked. Really, only Crosby was dominant in the faceoff circle. Aside from that, as you noted, -3 and outplayed by the top players of the Capitals. On the back end, Barry Trotz didn't like Dmitry Orlov's play and sat him for basically the majority of the game after his miscue when Nick Bonino went right around him. Are you concerned at all about being a little bit too top-heavy on the back end where Washington is really deemed to have an advantage over Pittsburgh?
That's a good question. I asked Barry Trotz about that yesterday, and I said, you know, you stuck by Dmitry Orlov for 82 games in the regular season. Does the leash get a little shorter in the playoffs? And he said, Yep, it does get shorter in the playoffs. And I think, you know, because they have guys like Mike Weber and Tyler Tourney who have played a lot this season and both played in round one, Tourney played two games, the Caps lost both, and Weber played in game six against Philly, and the Caps won that game. So he's got somebody waiting for that, and Weber is a stay-at-home guy who could play alongside Nate Schmidt, who can run with the puck. Mm-hmm. So there are some options there. I get the feeling that we may not see Orlov tonight, but I'll know in about 10 minutes to see who they're paired with in the morning skate.
Chuck Gormley is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Washington Capitals for CSN, midatlantic.com. Chuck, in the middle of the game, Tom Wilson seemed like he went out of his way to stick out the knee on Connor Sheary. It was announced yesterday, no suspension, that he would just be fined the maximum amount of money. Did you think that was a suspendable play, or is that sort of maybe suspendable in the regular season but not in the playoffs?
That's always a great question. I think it probably would have been suspendable in the regular season. He definitely went out of his way. And, you know, Barry Trotz doesn't lie, or he can't lie. And when he was asked about that, asked if it was dirty, he said, well, it was unnecessary. And I agree with him. You know, it's the playoffs. It's so hard to get a read on exactly what the Department of Player Safety deems dangerous. I think if you saw Connor Sheary not come back in that game, maybe there is a suspension. I think that you know, it's such a gray area, because you don't want to take hitting out of the game, but you definitely don't want to see guys injured and knocked out of the playoffs on a knee like that, because Tom Wilson was headed to the bench, didn't need to veer to his left to get that, and he did. And, you know how this goes. $2,400 or would hurt us, but not those guys.
Yeah.
You know, Chuck, speaking of Tom Wilson, who's one of the hardest hitters in the NHL, we're a big fan of his on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How much of an impact do you think physicality is going to have on the series? Because Pittsburgh is not a very physical team, and when you're talking about guys like Jason Chimera, Tom Wilson, Brooks Orpik, they have some guys that can be pretty physically dominating.
Absolutely. You know, we were talking with Jason Chimera about that yesterday, and he said there's a fine line between being physical and running around like a crazy maniac. Those were his words. But yeah, they're definitely going to try to target Chris Letang. The Caps had, I think, 43 hits in game one. I would guess that Chris Letang took at least 10 of those, and that's one of the things they want to do. I mean, they want to force Letang to go in, to turn around and go back and get pucks and hit them. And it's not just wearing down on the defense. It's breaking up any possible breakout passes. That's the key, because if the Penguins come at you with speed, they're going to kill you. And I think the Capitals understand that. They want to dump the puck in. They want to have a little bit of their own transition game, and they have speed. Like, Jason Chimera can hit people, but he's one of the fastest guys in the league at 36 years old. So I think that they need to continue on the body. I think that's a big plan of theirs, and maybe the best way to do that is dumping it in and have guys like Wilson hitting guys as much as possible.
Chuck, you've covered this team for a while now. Have you ever seen the team as confident in themselves as they are?
No, I haven't. You know, there was always this feeling of apprehension, not only from the fan base, which is tired of blowing two-game leads in the playoffs, but also in the locker room. You could see that on the bench in the third period if they're up a goal or down a goal. More so when they were up a goal. There was this tension on the bench, and I don't see that anymore. I really don't. This team did not lose a game in regulation all season when leading after two periods, and there's a reason for that. Guys like Justin Williams, Mike Richards, Daniel Winnick, who's had a great playoff so far, those guys can shut things down, and I think Barry Trotz is a good coach in that. It's not just what you say, but it's what you do mm-hmm. with the players that you have. So Mike Richards would be out there at the end of a period taking a key faceoff in the defensive zone. Jay Beagle, same thing. He coaches to win games, and that's the difference I see in this team.
Chuck Gormley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Capitals for CSNMidAtlantic.com. Chuck, you just mentioned Mike Richards, and of course he's a guy we're very familiar with here in Winnipeg. He's from nearby Kenora. You know, he's been held off the score sheet in terms of goals and assists through the first seven games of the playoffs, but are his contributions so far for the Capitals more than you can see just on the score sheet? Has he been effective in his role since coming back to the NHL this season?
I think so. I think he's been very effective, and you know, I'm a big fan of Mike Richards. Covered him for most of his all of his career in Philadelphia, actually. So I've seen him play at a very, very high level, and there's nothing he likes more than playoff hockey. There's probably nothing he likes more than facing Sidney Crosby. So I've seen his level step up probably a couple notches in the playoffs. I told a few people this the other day. I think 3 weeks ago, if you would have asked me, is Mike Richards going to make a difference in the playoffs, I would have said, I'm not sure, because he looked like a step slower than everybody else on the ice. But in the last 3 weeks, I swear he's two steps faster than he was. So maybe it's just the playoffs. Maybe it's him getting into better condition because he missed so much time in the first half of the season. But I think he's been very effective, and you'll see him taking defensive zone faceoffs against Crosby a lot tonight.
Chuck, you wrote about this yesterday on CSNMidAtlantic.com, how the Ovechkin-Backstrom-Oshie line dominated the Sidney Crosby line, and how Mike Sullivan might look to get that line up against the Kuznetsov line. Is that still the case, do you think, for today's game?
Well, when Mike was asked about that yesterday, he said it's a possibility that they'll try to get away from that. He wasn't surprised by that, because in the regular season, the two top lines have faced each other, so that didn't surprise him, but the fact that they were a minus three might lend him to try to get away from it. I mean, if I were him, I would. I would try to get Crosby out against Kuznetsov. Kuznetsov's a good possession player, but, you know, he can be a guy that they might be able to take advantage of in the offensive zone. And I think that's something that I think you would see absolutely more in games three and four than tonight in Washington because of the last change. But I would think that Mike Sullivan would try to get away from that.
Final question for you, Chuck. I know you got to go here to game day skate. Moving actually away from the Capitals, you mentioned the Flyers covering Mike Richards there. You covered the Flyers for about 23 years, and you covered Ed Snyder, of course, was the owner of that team. Can you speak about, you know, his legacy? We haven't had you on yet since he recently passed away.
Tremendous man. Passionate. The one thing I noticed right away about Ed Snyder is that when you talk to him, he looks you straight in the eye, and he doesn't waver. I mean, he was a man with very strong opinions, very passionate about his team, very passionate about the sport. And you don't see many team owners walking into locker rooms before and after games, mostly after games, and shaking every guy's hand. And every time that the Flyers made a trade, he would call that player on the phone and thank them for their service. So, tremendous man. I have a great deal of respect for him, and he built the Flyers into what they are right now.
Chuck Gormley covers the Washington Capitals for CSNMidAtlantic.com. Prior to that, he did cover the Philadelphia Flyers. Chuck, really appreciate your time this morning. We know it's a busy day for you, and we thank you for jumping on with us bright and early here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, Chuck. We will. Let's head to break. When we come back, more on the Caps Flyers. We're going to get to the draft lottery. A busy day ahead of you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
There's Trevor Daly. Here's TJ Oshie. Stole the puck. Oshie hangs on patiently. Wrap around. Scores! And there's what you guys are talking about there.
That looks like it's across the line.
Upon further review, the call on the ice stands. We have a good goal.
And with that goal from TJ Oshie, his third of the game, the Hats rain down on the ice and the Capitals take a 1-0 series lead over the Pittsburgh Penguins. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 9:15 in the morning, Saturday, the 30th of April. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Probably a whole bunch of TJ Oshie jerseys sold in the Washington region after that fantastic game one between the Penguins and the Capitals. Guys, we were talking, Richard, you and I were just talking about it during the break. This series, you know, I was saying, sometimes it takes you a game or two to really get into some series. This series didn't need that. From the first puck drop of the puck in game one, this is a riveting series for hockey fans, and the talent and the speed and the quality of play on the ice is something to behold. We saw it in game one, and as Chuck alluded to in the previous interview, hopefully that continues for the next 5-6 games.
Well, absolutely, Drew. I mean, you're talking about top-end talent, so that's why, yeah. To me, that's what I love most about watching. Malkin, Crosby, Ovechkin, guys who make plays, guys who are confident enough to take chances and not get yelled at by coaches. And the pace, I thought, improved throughout the game, which made it a better game to watch. You have a young netminder in Murray who's talented. You have Braden Holtby, who's just been tremendous. You have a dislike between the two teams. There's really not much. You have the Niskanen Orpik angle. There's a lot of angles to this series, and it probably should end up being the conference final, but we'll take it now, and it's just tremendous hockey.
Yeah, and if you think about it, Richie, another storyline is the fact that since 2009, the Penguins and Capitals have watched other teams in the Eastern Conference really kind of take a step ahead of them. So you're talking about teams like the Rangers, teams like the Lightning, right? You could even throw in a team like the Islanders and or even a team like the Panthers who have caught up to some of the other teams in the East, and now they're one of the more elite teams in the Eastern Conference, even though the Panthers got knocked out in the first round. But I agree with Rich. When you're talking about TJ Oshie, Alex Ovechkin, and Nicklas Backstrom, you're talking about the best first line in hockey as far as I'm concerned. And when you can throw out Andrei Burakovsky on your third line, I mean, he was a great player for the Washington Capitals this year. And we talked about Mike Richards, who struggled a little bit on the third line. But the Washington Capitals are playing so well defensively, Drew. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this team gets enough credit. Sure, when you talk about the Capitals, you're talking about one of the most dynamic offenses in the NHL. I would say the most dynamic. You know, apologies to the Dallas Stars, a very good offensive team. But this Caps team is just so strong, and they play so well as a five-man unit. And what I thought was so interesting about game one, you mentioned how exciting it was, Drew, from the puck drop. All the goals were scored at 5-on-5. So there were no power play goals in this game. When both teams have excellent power plays, especially when you're talking about the Capitals, who they could put out, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Oshie. I mean, you throw John Carlson out there, Kuznetsov. So much talent. Sure. Braden Holtby, this is the first time in the playoffs we've seen him let in more than two goals in a game. Right? So Holtby was excellent. I agree with Rich. I mean, Holtby, he was the reason why they won that series in large part. I mean, you're talking about Kuznetsov wasn't very good in that series. Burakovsky wasn't very good in that series. Justin Williams, who they got because he's Mr. Game 7, he didn't score a single goal in that series against Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Sure, Ovechkin and Backstrom were good, and they got some goals from defense, and they continue to
John
get...
John Carlson has 7 points. He's tied for the team lead in points.
Right, and they're going to continue to get contributions from Carlson. He's an excellent offensive defenseman. But needless to say, the Capitals are an excellent defensive team, and you know we talked to Chuck Gormley about Dmitry Orlov. Dmitry Orlov barely played in the third period, mm-hmm. so they're probably going to put in Taylor Chorney or Mike Weber, because if you think about it, the best line for Pittsburgh, Drew, in game one was the Nick Bonino, Phil Kessel, Carl Hagelin line. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty obvious if you look at the box score and you see that they were the guys that got the goals for Pittsburgh. But Pittsburgh's got depth too. That's a good third line. It might not be as good as you know the best third line in the NHL, but it's a pretty good third line. When you talk about Phil Kessel, you'd expect usually to be in your top six, but it's going to be a fantastic series. First game goes to overtime. I'm expecting this one to go to 7 games. I like the Capitals. I wouldn't be surprised if the Capitals finish off the Penguins in less than 7 games. But Pittsburgh's still a really good team, and I think they're better defensively than they get credit for, even though, I got to say this, the pair of Dumoulin and Daly did not look good in game one.
And that's where there's, an edge. It's Washington's second pairing over Pittsburgh's second pairing, I think, because you see a big edge in Orlov and Schmidt. Orlov and Schmidt's kind of a weird combo when you look at it, guys. And I say that because they're both real, you know, they're both puck movers, left-handed shooting, kind of offensive guys. And I would agree with Ezzy that I would think that Washington would make some changes on the, make a change on the back end and kind of put in a little bit more of a defensive defenseman. I appreciate that they probably started game one like that because Pittsburgh is a good skating team. You know, you mentioned that Bonino, Kessel, and Hagelin line, great speed there with that group, and Crosby and Malkin, and so many dominant players that Pittsburgh has. I mean, there's Sheary, there's no lack of skill and speed there. So I can see what the mindset was, but I think Washington can probably insulate one of those defensemen a little more with a stay-at-home guy. I don't even love Mike Weber's game, for example, but he would be more the type who probably would draw. And Taylor Chorney, a little bit more. Weber's a little bit more physical. They're both
a lot more physical.
They're both left-side guys. You know, they're not going to be dominant offensively. Chorney's offensive game is a little bit better than Weber, but
not that
I can
they
see
need
what
it.
No, but, you know, he's moving the puck out of the zone and making sure Pittsburgh doesn't get in on the forecheck.
Richie, Mike Weber's like a Willie Mitchell type of defenseman. He's big guy, physical, and I like Orlov, actually. Orlov had a pretty good regular season. He's a good
player.
He hasn't been good in the playoffs, and he struggled at times against Philadelphia in round one, so I can see what Barry Trotz is doing there. But again, I think, you know, going back to the first segment, I mean, Washington is so quick, and they're so physical. Mm-hmm. And even a guy like Alexander Ovechkin, you see him, he's usually getting four or five hits a game, it seems like, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this team is very tough to control. Pittsburgh was doing a good job, I think, of transitioning through the neutral zone and getting chances, and they obviously scored the three goals. But Washington, if you watch that game, Washington could have had six or seven goals. And when you consider, Drew, that Kuznetsov only has 1 point, one goal. That was his first goal in the entire playoffs. If he starts to get going there on the second line and Justin Williams starts to contribute, I think Pittsburgh's going to have a lot of trouble. And I think it's great. Matt Murray, rookie goaltender, he's done an excellent job. But this Capitals offense, I don't know if we've seen an offense like this in a long time.
As we mentioned, or as we were talking about with Chuck Gormley, they were on their, he was on his way to the morning skate. No sign of Carl Alsner by the looks of it yet. And if you look at the defensive pairings for the Capitals tonight, it looks like Mike Weber and Matt Niskanen are going to be paired up. And then it's going to be Nate Schmidt alongside Taylor Chorney. So it does look like Dmitry Orlov is going to be out of the lineup after a disappointing game one for head coach Barry Trotz. Obviously yet to be determined. Maybe Alsner is going to, you know, be a game-time decision or something along those lines.
And I don't expect, Richie, for them to really miss a beat. Because if you think about it, Brooks Orpik missed a lot of games earlier this season, and the Washington Capitals were winning a lot of hockey games. So I think they're going to feel the loss a little bit. But again, I think Pittsburgh, if they don't get that top line of Crosby going, and they're going to try to get them against the Evgeny Kuznetsov second line, with Johansson and Justin Williams, because they just were completely dominated and mismatched versus Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Oshie. I mean, that line, what did they combine for? 6 points with Oshie's hat trick. So I think they got to figure that out. And again, you got to try to get as much traffic as you can on Braden Holtby, but it's tough. And Washington's defense is a physical defense. Chorney's less physical than Mike Weber, but they can still move the puck out of their zone. And I think if Pittsburgh is constantly chasing the puck, I don't think they have a chance in this series.
Chris Kunitz obviously would left the game one after taking a puck up in the face head region. Impact of him being out of the lineup, we don't know if he's going to be in or out tonight. Significance of the loss of potentially Chris Kunitz for the Penguins.
I mean, I wouldn't be too concerned. Chris Kunitz isn't as effective as he once was, Drew. I mean, certainly he's a contributor, but he's not. I wouldn't be that concerned about that.
He's not Chris Kunitz Olympian.
He's been bumped to the third line, Richie.
Yeah, I mean, he's just not as effective as he was. I mean, even when the Olympian, he was kind of, that was the beginning of the downturn. So, sure, you want your guys there and guys who can, you know, pretty good hands and don't mind getting their nose dirty. But I mean, there's a lot to like about Pittsburgh's game. There's a lot to like about that first game. And what you're if Matt Murray doesn't let in, you could argue two bad goals. They win that game.
Well, let's talk about the significance. Still no sign of Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, we don't know when, if he's going to return to the net. Obviously suffering from concussion syndrome or, you know, concussion symptoms after suffering a concussion at the end of the year. You know, if Matt Murray is the guy, you know, can he... I mean, Braden Holtby's been the best goaltender in the NHL all season long.
Yes.
What do you need from Matt Murray just, you know, to make it a 6-7 competitive series?
I mean, Matt Murray's got the talent, it appears. He's been, you know, really good in the small sample size we've seen this year of Matt Murray. You know, Drew, it's one game. You just want to make sure he's not affected by it. his confidence isn't affected by it. I wouldn't be too concerned right now after that game. But if he lets in, like the third goal bothered me more than any other goal, just the odd angle he took to kind of saving that puck. So, it was the third. The second Oshie goal. I mean, that can't happen. If that happens again this game, then you have to wonder about his psyche. But it's just one game, so you don't want to read too much into it.
Richie, you wonder, with Chris Kunitz out, Evgeny Malkin's actually been centering the third line with Chris Kunitz and Winkler's Eric Fair. So you wonder if maybe Mike Sullivan moves Evgeny Malkin up to the second line with Hagelin and Kessel and maybe bumps Nick Bonino down to the third
line.
Can
you split up those guys, though? I mean, they've been so effective.
Yeah.
Throughout the second half of the year, they've been effective, and they had that, Bonino creating that opportunity last game, the speed that those guys are able to do. Kessel had some good chances off the rush, so that'll be interesting to see. I mean, you never know. I mean, it's never a bad thing to put Evgeny Malkin anywhere.
Right.
They got to get the big boys going, though.
But you wonder,
Crosby and Malkin got to get going here. I mean, I realize it's only for the first game, but that Oshie, Backstrom, Ovechkin line is playing at such a high level right now that I don't care who you put in that. I mean, no disrespect to Marc-Andre Fleury, but it's tough for anybody to stop these guys.
Well, let's talk about the matchup there. How do they shut down? You probably can't shut down that line. It's been that good all season long. So what do the Penguins, who do the Penguins deploy to try and, say, neutralize that line as much as possible? Do they go back to the status quo, play best on best? Or do they try and and change it up a little bit?
I mean, Sidney Crosby is not playing with the same talented wingers that Nicholas Backstrom is, first off. Let's qualify that. Patrick Hornquist and Connor Sheary are not TJ Oshie and Alexander Ovechkin. So,
it's the kind of insight you come to the Illegal Curve.
Well, no, but I think, Drew, when you say Sidney Crosby got dominated.
I'm not saying
he's a minus three. I mean, he's minus three. You have to qualify by saying he doesn't play with as good players as Backstrom, who's right up there with Sidney Crosby.
Shots fired by Drew.
Having said that, guys like Sidney Crosby don't want to be moved away from best-on-best matchups. So I would give him another kick at the can. Maybe you get him away from him a little bit once in a while, but I don't know. If you're Sidney Crosby and you, I'm assuming, believe you're the best player in the world, there should be nothing that you can't conquer. So I don't think you'll see a significant move away, especially because they're on the road anyway, so there's only so much control you have on that.
I don't want to simplify it down to this, but you saw this a few years back when Pittsburgh played Philadelphia in the first round of the playoffs. Last game, you saw Barry Trotz put Tom Wilson's line and with Jay Beagle and Daniel Winnick out against Malkin's line, which is the third line. And you see how Evgeny Malkin, once you get really physical with him, how he gets off of his game. To me, he's the X factor in the series because he was excellent in round one versus the New York Rangers. But that New York Rangers defense was hurting, especially the way Dan Boyle acted a little bit towards the end.
What happened? Careful, he's going to yell at you.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's going to be another factor. Mike Sullivan's got to get the right matchups, and it's tough when you don't have last change,
sure.
Right, Drew? So
quickly before we go to break, your thoughts on Tom Wilson's hit on Connor Sheary?
I didn't like it. I mean, Tom Wilson plays on the edge. I think that's what makes Washington a difficult team to play against, but you can't be doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think he should have got suspended. I think a fine is okay. And I agree with Richie. I mean, Tom Wilson is a physical player. He made a mistake. I think he was trying to get the Pittsburgh Penguins off their game. Hopefully you don't see any of that kind of stuff for the rest of the series.
Let's head to break. When we return, draft lottery day. It's Christmas and Hanukkah and Passover all in one. We talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Draft lottery day, the day hockey fans in Canada have been waiting for with bated breath.
Settle down, Drew.
Since the regular season ended. Of course, live coverage of the draft lottery later on this evening here on TSN 1290. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns bring you wall-to-wall coverage about where the Winnipeg Jets will end up drafting in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We know they're going to be drafting at number 22. That's the pick they got from Chicago. The question is, are they at number 6? Are they at number 7? Are they winners of the lottery and they move up to 1, 2, or 3? who knows? We'll see later on this evening. It's an exciting opportunity.
Who do you think? What do you think it's going to be, Drew?
Well, it's a random lottery, Richard, so I have no idea whatsoever. I can randomly, you know, I appreciate people are excited, and I get it and everything else, and it's been a lousy year to be a Jets fan. But the amount of people talking to me about, man, I spun the draft simulator, and the Jets won it. And I look at them, and I'm like, you know that it has actually no bearing whatsoever.
I spun it for the first time yesterday. Yeah. We were playing hockey.
You don't really spin it, though. You click it.
Drew didn't show up. We were playing hockey and visiting our buddy Paul in the River Heights Skate Shop.
Yeah, shout out to Paul. Good guy. Yeah. Big fan of the show.
He's got the odds on the board. Yeah. And our buddy Hart said, you know, press the button. Of course, the Jets won.
There you go.
But the point
is that guaranteed now?
Yeah, exactly. The point is it's like a Powerball ticket. It's just a random lottery. And
by the way, I'm pretty sure both of you bought Powerball tickets. Am I correct about
that?
Yes,
100%. Yes.
Now I'll tell you,
both suckers.
It was like a $14 billion jackpot.
Yeah, and you won, right?
No.
If not for the Canadian teams, the seven Canadian teams in this lottery, you'd hope that the hype wouldn't be greater than it is for the playoffs, which is, you know, somewhat of a slap in the face to the actual playoff teams, the teams who have succeeded to this point. And it's also, let's be clear here, it's an attempt at for Rodgers to get ratings for a season in which they've had terrible ratings.
Sure.
So, I mean, don't think this is not media manufactured to an extent as well.
Yeah, but come on, guys. The reason why fans are so excited here is because of Austin Matthews. It's because of Puljujärvi.
It's
because
not
of Ryan.
It's the same as every year.
Well, but the draft. But the draft rules have changed this year.
Yeah, I know. For the top three picks.
Right.
The one it was won before.
Right.
The players, Austin Matthews, is he better than John Tavares? I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen Austin Matthews play, so I have him a cup of coffee in a World Junior game. But the point is that they're overhyped this year. Doesn't mean they're not going to be great, but doesn't mean the other years they weren't great.
I just think fans are always going to be excited about the unknown and are always going to be looking forward to the unknown. Rich, don't get me wrong. I think it's ridiculous. I've been looking on my Twitter feed for 3 months now and seeing that people are clicking the NHL draft lottery simulator. I agree with you. I think it has been overblown to a certain extent, but I can understand it, especially with not only the Canadian teams, but the teams that missed the playoffs and a team like Columbus, for example, who had such a disappointing year. Those fans want the first overall pick, right? So I'm not saying that fans haven't gotten a little bit crazy here, but Richie, we're talking about hockey fans. I mean, hockey fans are crazy. We're hockey fans. We're all completely out of our minds. I mean, we're following this stuff. All of us have clicked on the draft lottery simulator.
I have not.
I think you guys are being a little bit hypocritical.
I have not clicked on the draft lottery
simulator. I clicked
on it
yesterday for the first time. It was prompted. I was prompted to do so.
Yeah, but the people who are sitting there, they constantly.
No, but you know what? Whatever, Drew. I mean, so be it. So you want to do it. You want to. I mean, is it any different than sitting and looking at people's random tweets for?
No, it's a waste of time.
Yeah,
it's any number of things that we waste our time on in the course of our day-to-day lives.
I don't waste any of my time, Drew. No, I'm just productive all the time.
You are very productive all the time. So obviously.
No, but I just think there has been too much. I mean, remember that it wasn't this. It's been moved back a week. It's been moved into the prime time slot. So it's a media-driven thing. That's just what it is.
I'm pretty sure 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the draft lottery was done on a Wednesday. We were on for midweek, and it was done during one of our midweek shows, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I've been.
Yeah. I mean, so certainly the hype around it is because, you know, the national broadcaster needs to get something to gather eyeballs of Canadian hockey fans.
They're not even broadcasting their own games right now. I mean, it's embarrassing.
I know. That part is. I mean, are they still doing that for the second round? I'm not sure yet.
Well, you watched last night's game, Drew.
That's true. That's a good
then
point.
Then it wouldn't have. It wasn't. Anyhow.
So let's talk about the Jets. They have the sixth overall odds. They finished in sixth spot. They have a 7.5 chance to win the draft lottery.
What would you like us to analyze here?
Well, I don't want
to
ask you. I'm going to ask you, do you think that they can use, let's say they stay status quo. They stay sixth. Does that
We should mention, by the way, that they can't pick fourth or fifth.
That's correct. They can finish anywhere. They can do 1, 2, 3,
right.
6, 7, 8, or 9.
Right.
Now, if they finish ninth, the odds of that occurring are minuscule. Because that means the three teams behind them would all have had to win the lottery for the first three spots.
Right.
That's not going to happen. I think there's an odds matrix online that somebody was telling me about. I think the most likely position that the Jets finish is seventh. So they would drop one spot, most likely. Obviously, who knows? My question was going to be...
You'd think it would be Stain at sixth.
Apparently, it's not. I mean, I don't know.
It's all the combined odds of the teams behind them would make it possible that one team would jump over them.
And I'm not about to sit here and try and explain actuarial mathematics, because I can't do that.
Let's get my dad on the line.
He is a mathematician. He would be able to explain that to us, you know, much easier than I can. My question is, you know, if the Jets finish, you know, in where they are, sixth or seventh, can they use that 22nd overall pick, the other first-round pick in the first round, as any sort of ammunition? Do you think that's enough to sort of make any progress to move up, if that's something that they so desired? If they think it's a, you know, that there's really only four or five players that they want to target?
Maybe to move up to the four or five slot. I don't think any of these teams is going to be trading one of those top three spots for the 22nd pick plus the six, if that's the case. Yeah, I don't think that would be enough. But for the four and five, it might be an overpay too.
Well, sure.
To be honest,
yeah.
If you think the threshold, I don't know because I haven't seen these guys. But like, if you think that after what you've read is after the three, there's a drop off. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then you know you're only going to be able to move out probably a slot or two. And is that worth the difference? Is that worth any something like a late first round pick? Because those four, five, six, seven slots, for example, the players are all ranked fairly similarly.
Yeah, it sounds like there's the 1-2-3, you know, Matthews, Laine, and Puljujarvi. Then there's sort of a second tier with the forwards with Tkachuk and Dubois and Nylander, and then you get into that defenseman tier of between 7, 8, and 9 that's got Juho Levy and Sergachev and Chychrun in it.
Well, Ezzy saw Chychrun play the other day here in Grand Forks. So yeah, you can speak to him.
Very impressed by Jacob Chychrun. He was someone who was considered to be a can't-miss top three prospect a year ago, Drew. But I agree with you. I mean, I think that there's no doubt that Austin Matthews, Laine, and Puljujarvi are going to go 1-2-3. But if a team likes one of those defensemen, they might go 4 or 5. I mean, it's a pretty deep draft. I don't know necessarily if there is a McDavid or an Eichel, even though some seem to like Austin Matthews as much as Jack Eichel. It remains to be seen.
There's no McDavid.
No, I think nobody is going to say that there is a Connor McDavid in this draft, Richie, but it is a deep draft. And, you know, Drew, you mentioned the Jets now know that they picked 22nd overall because the Hawks were eliminated. And it's interesting. Last year, we went into the draft, starting to preview the draft in early June and talking about which teams would potentially move up. And then Boston Bruins, lo and behold, end up with 3 first-rounders. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people weren't happy with the way they drafted when you consider that many people thought they were going to draft Kyle Connor with pick 13, 14, or 15, and then the Jets got him at 17. But when you consider that the Jets have that chip to play and that's what's so intriguing. If they get the fourth or pardon me, they can't get the fourth or fifth. If they get the sixth or seventh overall pick, do they try to move up to 4 or 5, right? Do they try to use that 22nd overall pick, maybe throw in a player to entice someone if they really like one of those players? That's what's so intriguing about the NHL draft, right? So there is a good possibility, not only the Winnipeg Jets doing that, but I think when you consider the top-end talent, and there is a drop-off when you get into the mid-rounds, but even when you talk about players like Clayton Keller, who is the MVP of the World Under-18, watched him play, many people think he might go in the top 6 or 7 as well, right?
Sure.
So there's a lot of good players there. There always is. So, I mean, again, to Richie's point, though, we have no clue where the Jets are going to land. Neither do Edmonton Oilers fans or Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, we know the Oilers
fans
are going to win. The question is, the second or third, because the Oilers always win the draft lottery. It's part of it's in the NHL's constitution, I believe, is that the Oilers have to finish first overall.
You know, for me, who here in Winnipeg covering the Jets, I'm a Jets fan at the end of the day, too. But I'm a fan of hockey as well, and if Edmonton does get the first overall pick, I don't think that that's a bad thing.
Come on.
I don't Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews on a Canadian team together, I don't think that's a bad thing, pardon me.
Well, it's not a bad thing for, you know, the on-ice performance. It would be fun to watch those guys together, but from the competitive balance and from the rewarding teams that suck aspect year after year, then it's a bad thing.
But when we're talking about how unfortunate it is that there are no Canadian teams in the playoffs this year, wouldn't you want a Canadian team to get a top prospect? That's my point. I mean, regardless of who gets the first overall pick, I mean, I personally don't have a problem with anybody getting the first overall pick. But if it's the Edmonton Oilers, even though they've had 4 of the last 6 first overall picks, I'm just saying, if you're someone who likes Canadian teams, to be in the playoffs and to have.
I feel like if you're living in Winnipeg, you used to like Canadian teams, and now that the Jets are in it, you hate all Canadian teams.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about real on-ice playoff teams.
Who do you think is going to win the lottery, Drew?
It's a random draw, Richard. We're going to wait and find out. Brian Munns, Paul Edmonds, bring you all the coverage later on this evening here on TSN 1290. We know you're going to want to hear what's happening. I get it.
Only 9 hours and 14 minutes to go.
When we come back, we'll talk about the Stars and the Blues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Taken by St. Louis. Renick pucks up. Right in. Hemsky denied. They score!
And the Stars maintained the lead right through the end of the game, winning Game 1 last night between the Blues and the Stars. They take a series lead, 1-0. They won the game 2-1. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Become a member of Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, and you'll receive the same playing privileges at Clear Lake Golf Course, located in beautiful Riding Mountain National Park. Find out more at bellacres.com and follow them on Twitter at bellacres.
And Drew, I'm told from a very reliable source that Clear Lake Golf Course is open today.
Open today.
Yep.
Hey now. Beautiful place to play some golf if you've never had the opportunity to get up there to Riding Mountain National Park.
Yeah, we're going
to
be heading up there a little bit later in the summer, and it's a beautiful area. Looking forward to it. And as you know, Drew, I can crush the ball off the tee. I also have a pretty good short game, too, so I'm just saying, if you want to play for a little cash, ready to go.
Giddy up, Ezzy. Giddy up. You're going to be buying me many, many meals or drinks or whatever we end up playing for.
Can we actually play for nickels?
Yeah, we can play for nickels.
Okay.
There's no problem there whatsoever. Should mention before we get into the Stars and the Blues series that you guys, prior to the series beginning, all made predictions for how the round two was going to play out. You had both a successful round one in that you both went 6-2 in your round one prediction. So kudos to both of you for a job well done in round one.
Yeah, Richie and I actually had the Detroit-Tampa series wrong. But Richie took L.A. and I took Chicago. That was the only series that we differed on.
There you go.
So not bad.
Not too bad. Not too
I think
shabby.
I was telling you off air, Drew. I remember a couple of years ago, I think I went 3-5 in round one. So
yeah, it's pretty terrible.
6-2, I'll take it.
Yeah, no, 6-2, way better than 3-5. You should really hang your head in shame a little bit there. Your round two predictions, you guys both have Washington in 7 games. And in the Stars-Blues series, which we're going to be talking about, Rich, you have the Dallas Stars in 7. Ezzy, you have the St. Louis Blues in 6. We'll get through the other series coming up as we preview them or as we analyze them.
By the way, Rich, that prediction of St. Louis in 6 isn't looking very good right
well,
now.
Well, one game.
Yeah, one game. You know, to your point, though, Rich, or, you know, you have the Stars in 7 as you have the Blues in 6. Are the Dallas Stars not getting enough respect?
Yeah, I do think that because I think the most picks
not I've for seen, me. I mean, I think the Blues are a good team.
But most picks I've seen, most picks I've seen, though, have the Blues winning. I'm not saying that I don't think they're going to win. I'm not saying they're not going to win, but
That was disrespectful, Drew.
I think that Sagan not being there certainly affects the how much respect Dallas gets, and his status is unknown. We know he's not going to play on game two, but after that, it doesn't really sound like he's going to play. But who knows?
Mm-hmm.
One thing I think ought to be noted and is the defense of Dallas, and it's not as top end. There's not top end talent like Chicago has, but they do have depth that Chicago doesn't have. And they're able to play three pairing, you know, Goligoski and Klingberg and Russell and Demers and John's up there with Oduya. They're able to, it's a mobile defense, more mobile than, a better skating defense maybe than people realize against the St. Louis team that's pretty slow up front. And I think that's a big thing in terms of St. Louis has the depth. Chicago didn't have the depth. And so Dallas can roll those lines out those defensive pairings out against those St. Louis Lions and feel fairly comfortable with where they're at. And certainly if Lettinen plays at the level he did yesterday, they'll be all right. But I think one thing that another thing that needs to be noted is, sure, Sagan's out, but Spezza set up his game. Cody Eakin's an underrated player. There's depth in Dallas and skill-wise. So I think that they've haven't been getting, and I know that their defensive game lacks at times, but they were a very good team this year. And so I like St. Louis' squad, don't get me wrong, but I think Dallas is being a little bit, at least coming into the series, a little bit disrespected that people thought St. Louis would handle them. Maybe not easily, but more easily than I thought that they would, more easy of a battle than I thought they'd face.
To your point about the defense, you have the stars. Steven Johns played the fewest minutes at 13 minutes, mm-hmm. which is a decent amount of ice time mm-hmm. for your number six defenseman. And John Klingberg played the most at 23-17. Mm-hmm. So Lindy Ruff was able to get all six guys, more than 10 minutes worth of ice time and, keep everybody fresh, keep everybody rolling, keep everyone in the game.
Well, speaking of Lindy Ruff, you got to give him credit. Richie mentioned Cody Eakin, of course, a Winnipeg boy, mm-hmm. former guest of Illegal Curve. He's allowed him to play on the first line when you'd expected maybe earlier in the playoffs when Tyler Seguin went down that he might elevate Jason Spezza to that first line center role. And as Richie mentioned, we don't know if Tyler Seguin is going to come back in the second round or in the playoffs at all. He hasn't been skating, right, after leaving game two of the first round series. So when you look at this Dallas Stars team, though, Richie mentions, I would give the edge to St. Louis as far as on defense and in goal, but I would give the edge to Dallas, even though St. Louis has a great group of forwards as well. But when you're talking about who was really driving the bus yesterday, it's the Roussel, Faxa, Hemsky line. And that's your third line, and that's another really mm-hmm. good third line, right? And even the fourth line, Valerie Nichushkin can't get into this lineup right now. A couple of years back, Valerie Nichushkin was a Calder Trophy candidate, and he struggled in the playoffs. I'll say that much. And Travis Moen is a veteran who gives you that physical presence against a very heavy St. Louis Blues team, Drew. But the point being that there's so much balance throughout the lines. And that game was tied until, the 4:40 mark or whatever it was there with Dallas going ahead. And to me, that was a perfect example of the difference between these two teams, Rich. It's such a slight difference between these two teams. I guess slight... and when I say slight difference, I mean there isn't much difference between these two teams. The skill level and when you match up the entire rosters, they're both excellent teams. I think these are the two best teams in the Western Conference. And I think Chicago was up there, and the margin mm-hmm. for error mm-hmm. is so small. You look at what happened on that go-ahead goal by Radek Faxa. Jay Bouwmeester gets caught up. He pinches a little bit. Alex Pietrangelo is back, and he kind of doesn't take the right guy. And it's a rebound goal that goes to Radek Faxa with John Klingberg jumping up into the play. I mean, this Dallas Stars team is so fast, and they bury their chances. They're very accurate. They've got a lot of snipers. Even when you get off of the first couple of lines, and you don't even have Tyler Seguin in the lineup. I think if Tyler Seguin is in the lineup, I think a lot more people are picking Dallas.
Go ahead, Rich.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. And I think that Dallas is, that kind of galvanizes the group in there because people aren't really respected. I don't think that's, lots of time you'll hear that, they're not respecting us, and I don't believe it. Like it's just they've made it up to try and create something to rally around here. I think it's real. And I think, do they have the goaltending? Is their defense good enough?
Sure.
Without Sagan. Yada yada. And I think and it's only one game yesterday, but it's a good start. Outplayed. Brian Elliott was very good. And I don't think strictly talent-wise, I don't think Brian Elliott is better than Kari Lehtinen. But I think he's been mentally stronger he's had his own problems, Elliott, but Lehtinen's had some mental in terms of confidence issues. But if he gets confident, Kari Lehtinen can be a very, very good goaltender.
You're saying he's a streaky goaltender, and I mean, last night he made the saves he needed to make. He had that, I'm trying to remember who that save was on late in the game. I can't remember, it's gone out of my head, that he made a real, in close, he was big and he was able to knock away the puck and everything else. And Kari Lehtinen is, I mean, he was so bad at times in the Minnesota series, but to your point, you're saying that he can be, he can flip that on, and if he's just that good as he was bad, then the Stars are in a much better position.
Lettinen only had that one bad game, and then Lindy Ruff went to Antti Niemi. I actually thought Lettinen was fairly good in his three wins. And
Came apart a little bit at the end of that last game that they won.
Right, and that's the danger, right, Drew? When you get into a situation, ask Bruce Boudreau, right? When you go into the playoffs and you're not sure who your number one goalie is, and then someone falters, like John Gibson, and then you go to Freddie Anderson, well, now you can't bite the hand that feeds you, right? Now you have to stay with Freddie Anderson. And the Stars at this point, as far as I'm concerned, have to stay with Kari Lettinen. He's the better goalie. Even though Lettinen and Niemi split the starts, I think he's the better goalie. I think Richie agrees, too.
I definitely agree with you.
When you're at this point in the playoffs, second round, sure, if you have a goaltender who's really struggling, you got to pull him out. But I don't think Lettinen was really the reason. Let's be honest, there were two bad games in that series. Dallas absolutely dominated that series. Minnesota was desperate. They were down 3-0, and Minnesota's got some good players. They're not going to go out quietly. They didn't want to get swept, right, Drew? So sure. I think, to Richie's point, I mean, this is a very good Dallas Stars team, and when you take out a guy like Sagan and you look at the rest of the lineup, you say, okay, well, St. Louis, you know, with Schwartz and Backes and Stastny and Tarasenko and Pietrangelo, you say, okay, well, yeah, the Blues just beat the Blackhawks. They've got the advantage here. Not quite the case here. This Dallas Stars team is a very deep team, and they're going to be tough to beat.
There's a letdown factor there,
I am picking the Blues still, by the way.
Yeah, there's a letdown factor there, too, in terms of, you know, conquering
the Blackhawks
and then coming up against a Dallas team that just doesn't give you the same motivation. Even though you're in the second round, it doesn't give you the same motivation. So I think that's a factor as well. Another thing I'm going to say from a Dallas perspective, and I like it from St. Louis, too, is I really do like the captains butting heads. I like the... And they have a history of, they fought, I think it was this past December.
Yep.
That's two big guys.
Jamie Benn held his own in that fight.
Oh, Jamie Benn is the total package.
Jamie Benn's a big boy. I wanted to say one other thing. It worries me a little bit, Drew, and it probably worries the St. Louis Blues and Ken Hitchcock. You wonder if that seven-game series versus Chicago with the overtime games and all the physicality and all that, the style that they play, if that's going to wear them down a little bit. Because in game one, Dallas had the legs. For sure.
Which is not a surprise necessarily. You know, what do you think about the way Ken Hitchcock has been deploying Vladimir Tarasenko? A lot was made with that, you know, in Game 6 and Game 7 of that first round series against the Blackhawks. Do you think that he needs to have Tarasenko, you know, arguably one of the top three right wingers in the game? Do you think he needs to play him more?
I don't think he's really going to. I think he's going to stick with what he's been doing, Drew. He's a guy who's strong in his convictions, wants a guy to play better defensively, and is going to weigh that when he makes his decision. I just don't think he's going to change. Ken Hitchcock is a guy who's been coaching for many years. He's not going to change suddenly now and make roster adjustments based on public pressure.
Do you think he should?
Do I think he should? I think that the way they play, I mean, I would probably want to get Tarasenko out there a little more. I didn't really like, I mean, Tarasenko getting mad at Hitchcock on the bench, I didn't like that, but I would probably try and get him out there a little more, but I don't think to an extreme. I don't think you change to an extreme. I think sometimes you try and get matchups and maybe you throw him on there with the bottom end players.
Like double shift.
Yeah, and get him a shift or two extra, but I don't have a huge issue with that.
Richie, Tarasenko is going to get his power play time. He's not going to play on the PK. They have other players that are going to play on the PK, guys like Steen and Backes. Ken Hitchcock, to Richie's point, as we know, is the ultimate line master. I mean, you see him change his lines in-game, all season. The St. Louis Blues forward lines, especially considering they had a lot of health problems, especially with Schwartz and Berglund earlier in the season, Ken Hitchcock switches his lines all the time. And the way Tarasenko plays, he's not the best defensive player. He's one of the best snipers in the NHL, but he's said on the record that he doesn't trust him in certain defensive situations. So that's why he's going to go to guys Backes and Troy Brouwer, veteran guys like this. So I wouldn't expect ice time to change much for him.
The only thing is in this day and age, nobody holds the player accountable. And I'm not saying that too many teams stress defense over offense. But I'm saying in this instance, if you're Vladimir Tarasenko and you want to play badly,
You want to badly play.
Yeah, sorry. You want to
be in the lineup. You want ice time as possible.
You want to badly play, Drew Story. Then improve your defensive game, and you'll get more time. So I mean, it's not just throw only the responsibility onto the coach here.
You can say play badly. It depends which word you stress. It means the same thing. He wants to play badly.
Yeah, he's a comma.
Like,
badly.
He doesn't want to play poorly, but he really wants to play. Like, I badly want to play. Let's play badly.
He's a mathematician. He's an English grammarist. He's everything under the sun. Let's head to break. When we come
back,
thanks,
Merriam-Webster.
Mike Hajka joins us to discuss the Blues and Stars series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook. com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Mike Hajka. Mike covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How are you, Mike?
I'm great.
That's good. A fantastic game one last night between the Stars and the Blues. The Stars pull out the 2-1 victory to take a one-game-to-none lead. This previous segment, we were talking about the series, and I asked Richard and I asked Ezra, you know, are the Dallas Stars being disrespected as the series begins, you know, or maybe not getting as much respect as they should for being the best team in the Western Conference all season long? You know, your thoughts on that question, you know, are the Dallas Stars not getting as much respect as they deserve to start the series?
It's funny. Down here, I think a lot of the old-school hockey fans really do feel they're getting disrespected, either by the league or the TV stations or their own radio station down here opted to cover the NFL draft over Game 1 last night. They switched the Stars game to a sister station. So there is a lot of that feeling around. But I will tell you this, it's interesting from the start of the year. Jim Nill and a lot of people within the organization said from the start, we have to earn respect. This organization has missed the playoffs 6 out of 7 years. It hasn't been top of mind in the NHL. And so we have to go out as an organization and earn the respect of people. And they really are embracing that. And it's not a chip on their shoulder. It's not a, hey, we're the underdog thing. It's like, we've got work to do here, so let's go out and do the work.
Mike, how unlikely has the performance of Radek Faksa been, considering that he only had 12 points during the regular season, but he's been so good on that third line alongside Antoine Roussel?
Yeah, I wrote this morning about it. It's an interesting topic for longtime Stars fans because Jack Campbell last night gave up 4 goals on 18 shots, and that may have been his last appearance for the Stars organization. And last year, or last summer, Scott Glennie washed out. Glennie was an 8th overall pick. Campbell was 11th overall pick. Radek Faksa is a 13th overall pick. He's got talent. He should be really good, and he's battled some injuries in his minor league and junior time, and he's just now starting to get his legs under him. He had 26 points in 28 AHL games this year, got called up and was put into a very strong checking role, and that's one of the reasons he hasn't gotten a ton of points. But then as the season started to roll down, Lindy Ruff kind of just hit on an odd combination of Antoine Roussel, the agitator, with Radek Faksa, the checking line center, with Aleš Hemský, the can't-find-a-place-in-the-top-six winger, and that line has gone crazy. And a lot of it is the chemistry between Fox and Hemský, who are both from the Czech Republic, and the fact that Fox is just really good at what he does, which is annoying and checking the other team's best players. And so this all goes back to, you know, back in the day when Ken Hitchcock, ironically enough, took Mike Modano and turned him into the checking line center and said, hey, go after Joe Sakic or go after, Steve Yzerman, Sergei Fedorov, whatever it is. The thought process was, well, yes, you know, Mike's going to give up some numbers, but he's also going to be facing the other team's best offensive players who don't really want to play defense. And so that's kind of what's happened with this line with Faksa and Hemsky, and the Roussel, too, where they're playing against the other team's best offensive players, and that creates offensive opportunities for them. Because as soon as they can force a turnover, boom, they're counterattacking the other way and creating opportunities. There's a big circular logic to it, but it really makes a lot of sense. This guy is a talented player, 13th overall pick, who's being put in a position where he should succeed, and he succeeded.
Mike, a lot's made about Tyler Seguin, and we want to get an update on his status, but just how impressive of a leader you see last night, Jamie Benn battling with Davis Backus. How is he in the conversation for, top five players in the National Hockey League, and is he taking this game even to the next level here?
Yeah, I think he has over the last couple of years. What's interesting about Jamie is he really hasn't gotten the opportunity to show himself and what he can do. When he came out of junior hockey in Kelowna, he took his team to the Memorial Cup. When he got his rookie year, they missed the playoffs. They sent him down to the AHL. He led the Texas Stars to the AHL finals. When he went to the Olympics, he helped Canada win the gold medal. When you put him in a position where it said, okay, elevate your game, every time he's been in that position, he's elevated this game. And so it's not surprising, and it's also he hasn't had the opportunity, and this is his opportunity, and he is. He loves it. He is embracing it. He loves the battles with Backus. I think it makes him a better offensive player when he goes in there and starts hitting people. It engages him. I think he's doing that. And then, we always come back with, you judge players on points. I'm sorry, it's just what you do. And if by the, I think he's third in the last three seasons total in points in the NHL. So, yeah, if you're judging on points, I think he is one of the top five, at least the top five forwards, if not the top five players in the NHL right now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Mike Hajka of the Dallas Morning News. He covers the Dallas Stars. Mike, you look at the Stars goaltending, and it's been a question really all season long. And Kari Lehtonen was very good last night, and for the most part in the first round series against the Minnesota Wild, he was pretty decent. Did Lindy Ruff err in yanking him out of the series and going to Antti Niemi for those two games as quickly as he did in that first round?
Maybe, but I think what's interesting about this whole goaltending tandem thing is that the longest stretch that Kari went sitting was five games, and the longest stretch that Antti went sitting was four games. So they're both used to this. You could say, hey, Lindy aired, but Antti came in and played a really good game four, I think it was. And then struggled in game five. So then when Kari came back, was he a better goalie because he got to sit for two games? If you let him in game four, would he have lost game four when Antti really played very well in game four? So it's a tough question. It's not really been done before. You've had goalies like St. Louis does where we're going to go with the hot goalie and ride him for 10, 12 games. Here, it's not been a stretch of more than four games that at least one of them hasn't played. So it wouldn't surprise me if Antti plays in this series as well. It's just what they've done all year, and it's worked for them, and they've gotten 50 wins, and they got past the first round. So it's going to be a process of if they need to give one of the goalies a game off, they'll give the goalie a game off.
Mike, Lindy Ruff has used Stephen Johns quite a bit on that second pair with Johnny Oduya, and he's played really well, but he did struggle a little bit at times in that first round series. Do you have any concerns about Stephen Johns, being a rookie defenseman, only playing a handful of games during the regular season? Do you have any concerns about him going forward in this series and the rest of the playoffs after that, or is it not a problem because of how good that third pair is there with Chris Russell and Jason Demers?
I think there's concern. I think there's concern anytime there's a young kid in there. He's been actually kind of blessed in this whole process, and I don't know if that's because Johnny Oduya is good at covering up mistakes or if Stephen Johns is just good at covering up mistakes. But he has made mistakes, and they really haven't bit the team too hard. He just has this knack for recovering quickly. He's a rookie, and so he's going to make mistakes, and as the pressure gets dialed up, I think, in a series, I would want to try and at least send a few of my best players out against him. And he's a big, strong guy, but if, you know, if you're sending a some quicker, faster guys who can get around him or can, you know, manipulate him into places where they would like him to be, I definitely think he's a candidate to make mistakes going forward. But at the same time, he is the lone shining physical defenseman that they have, so they're going to ride out any mistakes they have with him. He's a big, strong, right-handed guy. He's a big part of their future, and so they're just going to endure any mistakes he might make going forward.
Mike, is Jason Spezza kind of relishing the opportunity to have more of a, you know, more pressure and increased role with Sagan out of the lineup?
Yeah, he loves it. He is he's so hockey. He's so Canadian. He's just it's in his blood. I think one of the interesting things is he's very open about talking about how he got to this place and how things deteriorated in Ottawa, mm-hmm. and how, as much as he wanted out of Ottawa, last year was a really hard transition year, and now he's feeling a lot more comfortable in Dallas. They were renting in a house last year. They moved into a house this year. His wife had another baby this year, so that's been a process getting through all of that. And he's in a really good place, I think, with everything now. So the fact that the Sagan injury came at this time when he's ready to embrace being a number one center again, it's worked out perfectly for him.
Mike, are you expecting to see Valeri Nichushkin back? I know he's been a scratch the last couple of games, and they've brought in Travis Moan for that veteran physical presence. But we watch Valeri Nichushkin play here quite a bit in Winnipeg with Dallas coming into town, and he has so much skill, but he just hasn't seemed to be able to put it all together in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't know. It could end up being a controversial decision for Lindy because the Texas Stars lost last night. So it was out in San Diego, so they're not going to be at practice today, but there's a really good chance 6, 7, 8 guys are going to get called up. Among those guys are Brett Ritchie and Curtis McKenzie, who are big, strong wingers who played really well for the Stars this year, the Dallas Stars. And so now Patrick Eves might be hurt. He took a puck off a foot last night. He may be fine, but if he's hurt, then the decision comes, do you put Nichushkin back in, or do you go to McKenzie or Ritchie? And I think most of the fans down here would go to McKenzie or Ritchie. So now if you passed Nichushkin by for Moan and you passed him by for McKenzie or Ritchie, yeah, you got a lot of talk going on about a first-round draft pick here. But they're going to do what they have to do to win these games, and these are difficult decisions right now. And Val has struggled with just, I don't know what it is, just understanding the flow of the game and moving quickly through the flow of the game. And if you watch the Stars, that's huge. It's paramount to what they do. They make quick passes. They make quick decisions. They anticipate where their teammates are going to be. And so far, Val has not been able to do that this season. And so then it becomes, is he right fit at the right time? You know, does he get his feelings hurt by not playing? Do you have to take that under consideration? There's a lot going on in that one. So it'll be very interesting to see today. If Eves comes back and is fine, then I think they all sit and Moan stays in because he's played well. If Eves can't play, they've got a tough decision to make.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. Tyler Seguin, we haven't seen him since early in round one. What's his status? You know, should Dallas Stars fans expect to see him back in the lineup, you know, at all this series? Or is it just sort of, you know, a question mark hanging over the team?
It's a question mark. I don't want to say they're hiding. They are hiding. They don't want anyone to know what's wrong with him. He has not skated. Jim Nill said this week it will be 4 to 5 days after he starts skating that he might be available for play. And then you're talking about putting a guy into a fairly revved up series in game, 6, 7? You know, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you other than I don't get the feeling that he's an immediate help at any time soon. So it'll be a process for him to get in. And you know, if they can advance to the next round, maybe that's a better option. But right now, with the way the calendar's going, if you're talking about he hasn't even skated and it's 4 to 5 days after he skates, you know, you're getting pretty deep in the series by that point. So, you know, I don't know. We don't know what his injury is. A lot of people think it's a calf. He's been working out off the ice. He hasn't skated. So it just seems like it's a, I don't know, yeah. almost like it's just a push to side, and we'll deal with that if he's, you know, if he's ready to come back, then we want to be 100% sure he's ready to come back, and we'll talk about it then.
Well, Mike, I have Tyler Seguin in two of my hockey pools, so if you could talk, if you could just talk to him and say, Tyler, you might want to come back for maybe game three or four, that would be great.
You should have got Radek Fox. I mean, come
That's
on.
Right.
You can pick
That's
right. him up easy.
Exactly. Mike Hajka covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Game two between the Stars and the Blues goes tomorrow. Mike, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. We'll talk to you guys soon.
We'll talk to you soon. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at some of the post-mortems for the teams that were eliminated in the first round. And we ask the question, is Dan Boyle still yelling at Larry Brooks? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Twenty minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Number of the first round teams, of course, eliminated earlier last week. You know, New York Rangers were one of them. They went out relatively meekly to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sure, the Rangers were banged up, but they also had some healthy scratches of guys that they brought in on some decent dollar contracts. One of those guys is Mr. Dan Boyle, who wasn't altogether happy with the coverage he received from Larry Brooks and Brett Sergalis in the New York media. Here's Dan Boyle. Last night, or pardon me, earlier this week, expressing his discontent.
Perfect, perfect. I want you out of here. Nobody likes you. Nobody respects you. Okay. Just so you know, at least I'm leaving here with the respect of my teammates. Okay. Instead of somebody like you that tries to bury somebody. That's all you do. Not a critique, but I'm just telling you I don't want you here. I have no respect for you. I want you to get the out.
I don't care.
Well, I can tell you to get the out if I want to.
You can. I don't have to listen.
Yeah, you do.
Okay, guys.
I want him out and the other clown, Brett, or whatever the his name is. Where's he at?
We're done, guys. We're done.
Everyone else is fine.
No, we're done. We're done.
You know, if you'd asked me politely, I might.
Politely? Why would I be polite with you? Are you kidding me?
Stop.
No, just leave. I just don't. We don't need.
Grow up.
I just want you to leave. That's all.
Well, I'll walk over here.
I just want you to leave. I don't want to see you.
We're going through this. I'm not leaving.
Is it not my right?
An ugly end to the New York Rangers season. An ugly end, possibly, to Dan Boyle's NHL career.
I love Larry Brooks. Larry Brooks is the man. Larry Brooks is the king. I would go as, well, actually, Richie's the king. But aside from Richie, Larry Brooks is certainly the king of New York. And, I mean, Dan Boyle, I mean, good hockey player. He's had a great career. He's got the Stanley Cup and everything, but very disrespectful. I thought that was uncalled for. And calling out Brett Sergalis as well. I mean, not professional, Drew. I thought it was very disrespectful, and I didn't think Larry Brooks deserved that. I mean, Larry Brooks is an excellent writer. He's doing his job, right? He's there. He's covering the team. Mm-hmm. Didn't think that was called for at all.
You know, I think that Dan Boyle probably regrets that. Larry Brooks has a job to do, and I think Larry Brooks comes from a different perspective, and for, certainly he's not one to back down from anybody. Excuse me. Larry Brooks actually got his start as the PR director for the New Jersey Devils. A lot of people don't realize that. Yeah. So he's been on both sides here, and the Rangers have a pretty strict media guy, as you know.
So, Richie, you're saying by covering, working with Lou Lamoriello, he's toughened up a little bit.
Well, but he's, he's aware of both sides of it, from the team angle and covering it from the press angle from the New York Post. And he's not one to back down, and he has a lot of influence. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think if you go back years ago, I think he had a significant influence on the Rangers paying big money for a guy like Bobby Holík and campaigning for that. And I think he does. I think he has an effect on team decisions, or at least has over the long haul. And you may not like him, and he may have gone after Dan Boyle. And frankly, Dan Boyle played very poorly in the New York Rangers. But his job is not, he has to go in there. He might rub you the wrong way. And, you can go back at him a little bit. That was over the top. And Brooks can take it. He's demonstrated in the past with Tortorella he can take it, but that was over the top. Brett Sergalis, Sergalis, how you pronounce his name. He writes for the Post as well. Boyle obviously goes at him too.
Well, he wasn't even there.
Yeah, but
he wasn't even in the room.
But he goes at him too and pretends like he doesn't know his name, even though he clearly does know who he is because he calls him out, even though he's, as you said, is he not there? But that was over the top. And Dan Boyle played poorly, and I realize, it's, I guess you could look at it from the perspective of beating the guy while he's down, but Larry Brooks has an obligation to me. He has an obligation to report what he sees to the fan base of the New York Rangers, who you'd assume would be a pretty discerning fan base. So his obligation is not to protect Dan Boyle. And if you think Winnipeg's a hard-hitting journalist, you go to New York and they call guys out, and that's just the way it is. So you have to be able to deal with that. I mean, you're getting paid big money. I know you've played in Tampa Bay before, San Jose, certainly not hot media markets. And you're going to go into New York, and if you're going to perform poorly and get paid fairly significantly over the last number of years of your career, you have to be able to take it. This is likely the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how he wants to go out?
Probably not, and that's why, to your point, you said that he probably regrets his actions there and his comments, and he was emotional. But, I mean, it's not like it was right after a game. He probably,
you read about that, Drew.
To some degree, I mean, he knew what he was doing. It's not like it was in the heat of the moment. He saw the guy and immediately got ragey or anything along those lines. And so Dan Boyle probably regrets it. But I don't want to talk about, strictly only Dan Boyle and Larry Brooks. Because Brooks, writes his column, and so far he hasn't addressed that in a column, and I doubt he will, to be perfectly honest. But Brooks writes that this is a changing of the guard moment for the New York Rangers. That the performance they had, the inconsistency all season long, the meek performance going out in five games to the Pittsburgh Penguins, that this is not, you're going to see a different New York Rangers team next year.
Yep.
Do you think that's correct? Do you,
yep.
Changes do you think that, Alain Vigneault and Jeff Gorton are going to make to overhaul or tweak this roster for the New York Rangers? And is their window closed?
As the team is constructed right now, it is, yes. So they need to make changes. And they have, Brooks writes some interesting comments. I thought about Alain Vigneault and being a hands-off coach. He's known for that, leaving the room to his group. And how the team kind of needed him to step up and take a little bit more responsibility this just because everybody was struggling at the same time. I thought that was an interesting point by Brooks, who's been, again, covering the Rangers for many, many years here. I don't think Eric Staal comes back. His play certainly didn't warrant a big contract to return. But the Rangers' big issues right now are on the back end. They've locked $11.2 million cap hit-wise for the foreseeable future, and Mark Staal and Dan Girardi, who struggled oftentimes this year. Brooks suggests the possibility of trading a guy like McDonough. I don't think that's going to be something that makes a lot of sense, but you could see, I think Rick Nash will be on the market. I would expect Rick Nash to be on the market. That would be the one big one I would expect.
Yeah, and you mentioned changing of the guard. I don't know if I would call it changing the guard in the sense that the core of this team, so when you're talking on defense, Richie, you're talking about McDonough, Girardi, Staal up front, you're talking about Brassard, Stepan, Kreider, Zuccarello, these guys that have been the core of the team for the last, at least 3 or 4 years now. And then you're talking about Eric Staal, who's probably not going to come back. I think you're going to see changes, but the core of this team is going to change. Is not going to change. I don't see McDonough being traded. That's your captain. He's your best defenseman. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, though. There were two main reasons, and they're pretty simple, why the Rangers were tossed in five games by the Penguins. Henrik Lundqvist didn't play well for Lundqvist. Mm-hmm. And there were tons of injuries on the back end with McDonough and Girardi. And when you're talking about Dan Boyle, he was a healthy scratch. Guys like Brady Shea and Dylan McArath, those guys had to step in. But you're playing against that vaunted Pittsburgh Penguins offense. Crosby is playing the best we've ever seen him play, possibly.
Their home performances were, I mean, as you, that home performance was awful. Like,
it was awful, but I'm just saying it doesn't all fall on Dan Boyle.
No, it doesn't all fall on Rick Nash.
I agree, Rich.
$4.5 million. He didn't do anything this year.
The amount of money that Rick Nash is playing, he got the one shorthanded goal in the series, which was a beautiful goal. But you need to see more of that from Rick Nash. And even guys that were driving the bus offensively in that series, there weren't many. But you're talking about the core guys like Brassard and Stepan. Brassard had that one three-point game in the series. I think it was game two. He was excellent. But you're talking about a lot of guys who were underwhelming. And more importantly, getting back to goaltending and defense, that was the staple of that Rangers team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Kings. And they're just not as good defensively as they used to be. When you talk about the Capitals defensively versus the New York Rangers, or I'll take that Islanders defense over the Rangers defense with Leddy and Hamonic and Boychuk and DeHaan. I like that. I think Mark Stahl's an excellent defenseman. I think he had a poor year. And again, McDonough and Girardi, are those guys as good as they used to be? I don't think they are.
McDonough, you'd hope it's not. You know, he has struggled more lately than before, but he's still 26. It's Girardi at 32, which probably concerns you the most.
Sure. Under contract for another 5 years.
Yeah, that's concerning. I mean, Henrik Lundqvist is at 8.5 for many years. He's 34 years old. So the problem, as he talks about the defensive game, and I think he's right about that, because if you have the forward group that they have, I wouldn't classify anybody as a superstar in that group. You have to be able to play the good team defense. And if you can't do that, and good play defensively on the back end, and if you can't do that, you don't have the game breakers up front to make up for it. And that's a big issue.
We will see what happens with the New York Rangers. We know that the Anaheim Ducks are in the market for a new head coach. We'll talk about it next. Bruce Boudreau out of work after the Ducks flame out in round one yet again. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.